Welcome to hour number two on a Monday with hashtag Daily K's host, Peter Bigg. Tired of just scratching the surface of Korea? Want to get deep in the weeds?
We unpack everything about Korea through its history on
Now and Then with David. It is a Monday, so you know what that means. Now and Then with David Tizard in the studio to make history incredibly interesting and fun, like it should be, unless you had a rubbish history teacher. I'm not looking at you, Mr. Alton. How are you doing, David? You look very smart.
Thank you very much. I was a bit worried there. You said David's in the studio to make history, and I thought you were going to stop there. But then you said to make history fun, and I was like, okay, I can make history if you want.
Let's do something. Let's do a first on Huddy Young Radio. Who knows? How have you been doing since we last saw you, sir?
I've been doing excellent. You know, I'm trying to stay humble, but my writing, my reading, everything's going well. Getting stuck into all the academic things that I should be. I'm being disciplined in all of those stuff.
You've got a book in the pipeline, right?
Yeah, it's got to be finished by August.
Okay, that's the deadline, is it?
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's not going bad, but there's many books I want to write.
First of many.
This might be the first one, and so lots that I'm doing.
Wow. Yeah. What can you reveal the general theme of that book, like what it's tackling?
This first book is my PhD dissertation, and a publisher reached out to me and said, we want you to turn this into a book.
Oh, nice.
And so it's having to revisit it, but to make it readable, because nobody wants to read a PhD dissertation. And it's been a couple of years since I've been there doing that, because, you know, I've been all over the culture and Hallyu and politics doing all these things. So I've got to get that book done. Mm-hmm. And then I want to write my next book, which is already started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm keeping busy.
Many
and I'm enjoying
in the
it.
Fire.
And I'm thankful for all the opportunities and privileges I get. The president of the Korea Times was messaging me this morning.
Wow.
On the way here. I know him quite well.
You write for them, right?
I write for them every week.
Yeah.
A column every week. And he was saying that your columns these days are
doing well. Fantastic. So. I love them. They're always issues that maybe, you know, you won't get to hear in many other parts of Korea, and then a real deep dive into those as well. Mm. That's why we get to pick your brain here. I love it. Today's topic, I don't know if we've done this. We maybe talked about Big Hit, did we?
No, we didn't. No. BTS.
Ah,
the
BTS.
Group we just played.
Okie dokie. Yes, Permission to Dance. But the entertainment agency in itself, I'm guessing we're going to look at one of the founders, or the founder as well, in a bit of detail. This might be a first, right? Or Now and Then.
Lots of firsts. I like doing lots of firsts. So we've done some Korean philosophy recently. We're doing individuals, not just parts of history. But I want to look at today SM Entertainment.
Ooh.
Because without SM Entertainment, one of the biggest K-pop agencies, I think it stands to reason without SM, you don't get BTS. You certainly don't get aespa. You don't get NCT. You don't get Seventeen. SM have not only contributed to K-pop as it is, but some might argue that the current K-pop system, the way trainees, the way music is produced and put out, it owes so much to SM Entertainment.
And I think, you know, when I came here in 2008, it was talked about like the big three, SM, JYP, YG.
Mm.
And out of them, I think it's safe to say that SM are the ones who are still kind of hitting it out the park much more than maybe JYP and YG. You know, YG have gone through a bit of controversy, and JYP, I just don't hear about them so much. Maybe their artists are still relatively popular.
Yeah, my I don't know if I can say this. My JYP stocks are still going up.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
They're doing all right. Oh. Everything else is going down, but
business-wise,
go JYP.
Okay.
But I chose SM today. What a good boy
good.
I am.
Yes.
This is not promotion. But if you're talking about that time, and we will come to the history, but around that time, the early to like 2005, 2010, that's where SM were just on top of the world.
Mm.
And K-pop equaled SM. So like just looking at SM Entertainment, Bernie Cho, ex-MTV executive, well-known in the industry here, he says that SM was the first Korean label to make K-pop bands as brands. They're not just kind of musicians, but they're something bigger.
Wow.
There's something in which you have fans and performances and colours and merchandise and all of that that we associate with K-pop today starts with SM and what they did with it. Now, last year, just to give you some data, SM's revenue is growing, so they're still getting bigger. They're up nearly 20%
wow.
in terms of money they made from 2021 to 2022. Mm. They've got like hundreds of thousands of applicants in multiple countries every year trying to get in to SM Entertainment. Now, I looked at this data. This is a little bit old. This data is about 5 years old, but it said that its YouTube page gets 1,000 views a second.
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy, isn't it?
It's huge. Yeah, SM are just like that.
This is a global phenomenon, right? Yeah. Not restricted to Korea at all, because many of our listeners, I'd say they shout out the most to SM Entertainment rather than other agencies. We've got lots of fans of lots of their artists. BoA was recently doing her 20th anniversary stuff, and so many of our listeners were on board with that and saying it's great to see her. And she, you know, represented SM in a lot of those early audition shows, right? She was kind of their face as well.
Yeah, lots to say about BoA.
Yeah.
Before we speak about BoA, I'm not sure how much time we have. Let's take a look at the man behind SM Entertainment, Lee Soo-man.
Okay.
Now, Lee Soo-man, you see some pictures. These are his album covers when he was an aspiring musician himself.
Wow.
So we normally associate Lee Soo-man with being a businessman, the man behind everything. But he had visions of his own career in music. He tried to do it, but the stories say that he found in Korea at the time the censorship.
Oh.
The environment, it wasn't to his liking. Okay. It didn't really work. And so what he did is he went off to the United States, did a master's degree in computer engineering at California State University,
okay.
which perhaps explains all the ESPA and NCT stuff that comes later. But while he was there, during the launch of MTV.
Oh, wow, back in the 80s.
Yeah, he saw MTV coming. He saw the music videos of Michael Jackson in particular. And he realized that it wasn't just about music, but there was this visual thing going on. And so, inspired by all of that, he eventually came back to Korea in 1985, and he was determined to do what he'd seen in the United States. So again, there's that influence, that international, cosmopolitan mixing of cultures is so important for K-pop.
Yeah, we got a photo of him like maybe back in the 80s starting out. And yet, to be honest, a lot of people who were successful in that kind of period in music on the edgier side had got influenced, or maybe had studied abroad or done something like that and then brought that back here. Wow. And so what, does he get some artists under his belt then?
Yeah, just to say one thing about that, I'm sure the listeners will have remembered me saying, because they're such good historians, but I'm sure the listeners will remember me saying that Koreans weren't freely allowed to travel abroad until January the 1st, 1989.
Yes.
So although Lee Soo-man went abroad, that's because he was doing graduate study.
Mm-hmm.
The average South Korean was not going abroad. They didn't have access really to Japanese culture. That was banned until the early 2000s here, cultural products. And so the international stuff seemed really new.
Yeah.
It seemed really visionary. So he came back. You saw him being a radio DJ. And then in the early 90s, he debuted his first artist. And at this time, it was still called SM Studio.
Uh-huh.
And he debuted Hyun Jin-young. Now, Hyun Jin-young came out in 1990. This is 2 years before Soteji. And this was trying to bring hip-hop to South Korea. Now, Hyun Jin-young, he passed an audition for Lee Soo-man. And do you know how he did it? Because he pulled off the tokki-chum. He pulled off the rabbit dance. The rabbit dance being, it's kind of like that MC Hammer one. You know that running man thing that you do on the spot?
Yeah.
Hyun Jin-young does that. Lee Soo-man puts him out there. He's going to be like this new hip-hop, but Korea wasn't really ready for it.
Mm.
You know, when Soteji came out a couple of years later, Korea was ready for Soteji. It was exactly what the country needed. But Hyun Jin-young was perhaps a little bit too early.
Uh-huh.
And then his career sort of, you know, a series of drug convictions for Hyun Jin-young meant that, you know, there was marijuana, there was methamphetamines. It was just scandal after scandal. And I say that because it's really important that Lee Soo-man's first artist that he launched got embroiled in a load of scandals.
Yeah.
And obviously that's something he's going to want to avoid, because if you invest all that money in an artist and then you get all these problems, you lose your money.
He learned that very early on. And I think isn't it kind of known in the industry that they're quite good for their artists being relatively controversy free these days? I mean, as much as that is possible in this day and age.
Yeah.
Welcome to Arirang Radio.
If you are in Jeju,
88.7 in Jeju City,
88.1 in Seogwipo City,
101.9 in the Daejeon area.
Arirang Radio.
Lots of messages from our listeners. Rao saying, basically, I feel now that HYBE is SM. Like, HYBE is the SM of today. Sadly for me, he says, but maybe it's a bit more complicated than that. I guess it is impossible to have success with all of your projects.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think there's an agency out there that has 100% success rate.
I'd be interesting to hear, that was Rao.
Yeah.
Yeah. What Rao thinks connects SM and HYBE. Mm. What is it, the qualities that SM perhaps used to have or SM are known for that you think HYBE are demonstrating today? Where are those things? Or is it just like an instinctual thing? Leon, perhaps, maybe if I ever take a week off, Leon will come and sit in this seat because Leon seems to know everything about SM, talking about some of the groups that were perhaps not as well known, Trax and The Grace, Isaac and Dion, also about the original TVXQ and how they had five members. And sometimes history is changed to only focus on the strengths or the successes. But you need all of them. They're all in there. Sometimes we run out of time and we focus on some, but I'm sure Isu Man has got them all in his head somewhere.
I'm sure, yeah. And Siska's saying, I've watched some vlogs about SM Entertainment and the history there. It's still a little confusing. And Aim Lee's saying, many musicians have covered that song by Hyun Jin Young.
Okay.
I have heard those. That did sound totally retro. And Nian's saying, HYBE's business strategy in SM to me seems pretty different, though. Yeah, I'm guessing in this day and age, HYBE compared to SM way back when decades ago must be different. So we're talking about SM Studio at that time.
Yep.
Where next? What happens?
Well, it becomes SM Entertainment. 1995, there's a CEO put into place. Now, Hyun Jin Young, we said that he had some problems, although relative success. Mm. And from 1992 to 1996, you have Soteji.
Yeah.
You have Soteji and Boys, and they're just amazing. They're so big in Korea. It's hard to put into words how big their influence were. The girls all wanted to date them. The boys all wanted to be them. Soteji was just incredibly big here. However, with Soteji, there was also these stories that he was banned from certain television things because of his appearance. He had ripped jeans, he had earrings, he had red dreadlocks. Mm-hmm. And the television company said, you can't do that on television. Some of his lyrics were banned because he was criticizing the government. And so because of these, Isu Man decided that we need our artists to be more regulated. Why are we going to spend all of this money training some people if then they're banned from television, if then they can't release their albums, if then they're in jail?
Yeah.
And so I think that becomes really important that it was about creating a system, not only to achieve amazing music, dances and performances, that's one side, but you also have the other side, which is to eradicate problems and controversies. So the training system is not just about dancing and singing, but it's also about behavior, relationships, media training, interviews. And so that's what Isu Man brings to K-pop, and that's what we associate it with it today, right?
Yeah.
But that wasn't there before Isu Man.
So yeah, I don't know, maybe if you're a purist, a pure like music buff, you might say, oh, that's not what music's about. It's supposed to be about the art and being free and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I like the way you say that, Pete.
But I guess from a business standpoint, that's really kind of making your success, making that path to success much easier, right?
Absolutely. And so with that in mind, Isu Man, it's got SM Entertainment, it's put in this training system. 1996, the first boy band to come out of we call it the SM stable, would be H.O.T. This starts off SM's upbeat, catchy style of dance music. It's not folk, it's not rock, it's not sort of hip hop, but it's just that that infectious, visual, very visual, very cute, very in-your-face pop. And H.O.T., if you know anything about K-pop, they just make it this huge impact into the Korean music scene.
Yeah, so after Seotaeji and the boys, it was H.O.T. and then G.O.D. and then which were you a bigger fan of,
Absolutely.
But yeah, it was all about their visuals and their costumes on stage and their dances and whatnot.
And I love going back and looking at all these pictures, the hairstyles and the fashions, and I like seeing which things are still similar and which things are different. You know, a lot of those poses might still carry across, and and that lineup, it's just the hairstyles are a little bit different. You change the hair and I think you've got K-pop today. And this is what, it's really important, SM, Isuman, was introducing at that time. Mm. But perhaps even bigger than H.O.T. was their first girl group that comes out when SES comes out. Their first album sells 600,000 copies. They just become, they're called the Nation's Fairies, SES. And so Isuman, in the first couple of years, demonstrates, I can do this boy group that's going to take the nation by storm. Mm. I can take this girl group that's going to become the nation's Daepyo or the fairies. And it's just hit after hit from him. He really starts with this huge success.
Yeah, SES were massive. I had a girl who was staying with us in London from Korea as like a student, and she homestayed with us, and she brought me an SES album, and I had no idea who they were.
Yeah.
But it was like this. It was really like pink and hazy and fairy-like, and I was like, no, like I'm a man. I'm listening to US hip hop and stuff. Yeah. But the pictures were beautiful. The songs were really kind of lovey-dovey ones.
Yes,
but
yes.
She told me in Korea, they are like everywhere. So I was like, oh, thank you for the CD. Not that I listened to it too much. What came next?
Well, you would think having H.O.T., having SES was enough.
And
I think it's really important just to remember how big these were at the time, especially just to say this, that there was no internet, so there was the television and the radio, and many people were listening to the same thing.
Yeah.
So if you were big, you were really big, and everybody knew about you. After that, Shinhwa came. Now, here you start getting... Now, Shinhwa were... originally, they were a bit of a slow burner. They had a few scandals at the start.
Oh, really?
And some people said, you know, this is just a copy of H.O.T. That was some of the criticisms. And I think this is really important and something that influenced Isuman as he went on, that he couldn't just keep repeating the same thing.
Sure.
It needed it. Shinhwa eventually became legends in their own right.
They're still going, right?
They're one of the only, I think they might be the only first generation groups still going. They were there when it all kicked off and still there today. And during this 90s period, as it starts, SM Entertainment, Isuman, they perfect the model for churning out acts that will get in the top 40s. They will pack concert halls. Mm. He demonstrated that he knows how to dominate the music business. And you would think that would be enough, but it's not even the start of it, Pete.
Yeah, that's maybe where he's done well, is not resting on those laurels, having like a successful girl group and boy band. Yeah, that would be enough for many agencies and concentrating on them.
Yeah.
I think that's what SM were good at in the early days compared to maybe the other agencies. Keep on going.
And there you have to remember just how much that keep on going is not just from Isuman, but it's from the artists themselves, that training and what they have to do, what they have to go through, the choreography, the vocal training, the how to speak. Isuman put that in. Like, if you wanted to be in this stable, in this group, it was required that you work hard.
Wow.
We must talk about BoA.
Uh-huh.
We must. Now, she debuted BoA when she was 13, she debuted in Korea and Japan at the same time. Mm. And so many Koreans actually thought she was Japanese.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. And she, it's hard to tell how big BoA was again, but there you start seeing the international success, this Korea and Japan. It's not just domestic, but we're going to release an artist now that's pan-Asian. It's not global yet, but it's more pan-Asian across Asia. Isuman has said that BoA basically saved SM Entertainment.
Because
the first generation artists were coming to an end. All their contracts were running out. It needed new artists to come in for the second generation. And BoA, her success, the money, the popularity that she brought in was just so helpful to help Isuman take from the first generation cross over to the second.
Wow, I didn't know she had that kind of role. But in Japan at the time, she was huge. She was like number one. And I think a few Japanese people also thought she was Japanese. Like, such was her level of activities out there.
Yeah.
And again, that same girl who introduced me to SES, she also talked about BoA and was like, she's 13, 14. I was like, what? She's like that young. Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. And she was like top of the charts and everything. Unbelievable.
I'm in London.
I'm in Australia.
Tokyo.
The Philippines.
Finland.
Indonesia.
New York.
Arirang Radio. Radio.
Now live in Seoul.
I was speaking to Jay Chong. Jay Chong was the guy that introduced R&B to Korea with the group Solid.
Now,
they were the huge here.
Yes.
When I was speaking to him, I said, Jay, you wrote a song for BoA.
I
love it. The name has suddenly gone out of my brain. And I was like, what was it like working with her? What was that song like? Mm-hmm. And he was like, I can't remember. I just remember she was really young. And it was just amazing to speak to a music producer who's had all these number ones. And he was like, I don't really remember that song, David. It was a busy time.
Wow. If you think of, you know, your own work life, if you were asked about a project from like 20 years ago, you wouldn't remember. But we expect like celebrities and maybe film stars who've been in multiple works to remember everything.
Yeah.
They'd forget as well, wouldn't they?
His one thing was just, wow, she was young, David.
Yeah, because that wasn't really a thing back then. That young.
No.
It's not even... Well, these days a bit more, like with NewJeans and other groups, they have some younger teens in their ranks, but 13, yeah.
And that's why maybe it's not really that new these days. Mm. I mean, you can go back to the Jackson 5, Donny Osmond, or how old those people were when they were debuting. And, you know, Isuman was, he was doing that already.
Yeah, that's true. Leon's back with some more info saying it is, I think, important also to talk about contract issues with SN Entertainment. They're known for it. It's kind of a dark part of their history. And like you mentioned, with the first generation idols coming to the end and BoA kind of saving the company, you know, maybe if they'd had a better relationship and contract talks had gone better, it wouldn't have been an issue, perhaps.
That's coming right up in the next part, because that's second generation stuff, that's TVXQ and things like that. Maybe Rao's looking at this idea of Rao's HOT was superb, the first era, and then becomes in commercial music because that makes the money. And yeah, if you want to know something about SNM, it's about making money, Raoul. They do that.
Yeah, Nian saying, BoA, yes, I actually heard her Japanese music before I ever heard her Korean stuff. And I think in her early days, she was bigger in Japan, safe to say, than here in Korea.
I might even suggest that BTS are bigger in Japan than they are in Korea. Because it's not always talked about, but BTS done like five Japanese language albums.
Wow.
And they're always top of the charts, like a lot of their streaming revenue that comes from Japan. So we were talking about what are the similarities between HYBE and SM. That focus on the Japanese market might be one.
Yeah.
Nian says that HYBE go out and purchase smaller record labels. SM is more focused on AI and internally. That's a really good point. That AI will come to that, Nian. And Joshua got into K-pop in 2011 from Asian friends. Everybody needs an Asian friend that you can get into K-pop and all the good stuff.
Okay, so second generation, TVXQ. Yeah. When I came to Korea 2008, they were pretty huge then, like Dongbangshinki, TVXQ.
Yeah.
I was a bit confused about those two names, but they were massive, right?
Yeah.
After debuting.
Yeah. And I've just realized that I didn't put a Dongbangshinki picture here. I don't know why, I'm sorry. But in 2003, this starts the second generation. For SM, they debut this five-member boy group, and this comes from the training system. And TVXQ, they had 13-year contracts. Now, this is almost double regular 7 years.
Yeah.
So you can see Isuman, he's learned from this first generation. All the contracts are coming to an end, and he's like, okay, and now I have to renew them or pay more or do whatever. And so the lesson that he tries to learn from the first to the second is maybe I need longer contracts. So that's what he starts with with TVXQ. It wasn't perhaps the best idea, but you also see Tracks and The Grace. They come out, but they don't really hit it as much as they should until perhaps 2005 when you get... Sorry. Super Junior. Now, this is different from SM because now... 13 members.
Yeah.
Never done anything that big before. They also start hitting Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Latin America. And this, what's important here is having such a large group.
Yeah.
That was completely different.
That was not a thing those days, right? Now you can see it from time to time and it's not so surprising. But back then, yeah, I was like, why are there so many of them? and they're still going as well. That's another group like Xinhua.
Yeah.
They're still going and still under SM, most of the artists. So maybe, yeah, he has learnt from some of those past things. And you mentioned, yeah, they were more famous in places like Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Latin America. They did some, I think, Spanish songs as well.
Yeah.
And so they now focus more on overseas, not just Japan and stuff, perhaps.
So they do that. And what that brings with it is then some foreign members.
Mm.
Because, and I want to make clear again, just to the listeners, that all the things we associate with K-pop today, the training system, the long contracts, the regulations on behavior, the large groups, the young people, like Isuman was at the forefront of all this. He was a pioneer. He was a vanguard. You know, he was working alongside other people in the industry, but he was there doing all this.
Wow.
And so you get foreign members come in, but let's talk about this golden period of SM entertainment. In 2007, 2008, and 2009, in those 3 years, we get three huge groups. The first being Girls' Generation.
Oh, yes, they come out, there's SM.
2007, they become the nation's girl group. And they're just so big.
Lots of members as well.
Girls' Generation were the biggest selling girl group in Korea and Japan for more than 10 years.
And Japan?
Korea and Japan for more than 10 years. I mean, they absolutely crushed it. All the members doing what SM does best. And yes.
So that was 2007. Then 2008.
2008, you get SHINee.
SHINee
do something different, right? So SHINee was a break from the SM mold because they bring in fashion and high-level performance.
Uh-huh.
So if you see the SES, the Girls' Generation, there's this kind of cute pop thing.
Sure.
But what SHINee are bringing in, they experimented with sound, aesthetic, and performance. They didn't always fit the typical SM mode. And this was seen as, you know, a different change for them.
Yeah, breaking out a little bit. That's cool.
And then 2009, in the next year, you get FX.
Oh, they were very different.
They were very different, particularly Amber, maybe with that tomboy look and going on that. But what I love looking at these pictures that they're sort of 14, 15 years ago, and you're like, well, if they debuted today, what have we seen change since then?
Like, sure.
It's very similar. Isuman, those 3 years were just so incredibly important for SM.
Yeah, wow. I totally forgot how many amazingly big popular artists they had across those years. SM Entertainment, though, you associate with Isuman. Like, if you're a big fan here, you'll know it. But he actually stepped down relatively a long time ago now.
Stepped down after those three groups.
Wow.
So he stepped down in 2010. He's the largest shareholder in SM Entertainment.
Okay.
And one of the reasons we're talking about this today is because HYBE and Kakao have both been trying to buy the largest shares in SM Entertainment at
the
moment.
Our listeners have been talking about that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's why we're trying to track back. I realize how much we're out of time, but let's just do a name call so listeners just recognize what SM have done.
Yeah.
So if you thought that was the golden period, 2012, you get EXO. Oh. You get the large groups. You get the members from China.
Mm.
And this established a future strategy for the group. This is what they're going to go for. And you think, wow, they've done all of those artists. Surely that's enough. But no, it's not. 2013, coming up after that, you get Red Velvet. Red because they're pop. Velvet because they're R&B.
Oh.
They're perhaps best known these days for their trip to Pyongyang.
Uh-huh.
Chairman Kim Jong-un is a fan.
Oh, yeah, when we had good relations at that time. I remember they went for some concerts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's Red Velvet. They're one of the only K-pop groups to have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Red Velvet, you get NCT. And this was really important for Aespa and other groups today, what NCT were doing.
Mm.
Because NCT, which stands for Neo Culture Technology, Isuman holds a press conference and he says, this is the future. We're combining technology.
Mm.
We're combining science. And remember his master's degree,
yeah,
what he was doing.
Computer science.
NCT is a unlimited. So there's unlimited members, there's endless combinations, and they're going to go into NCT U, NCT 127, NCT Dream, and then like the Avengers, they can all come together. And so there's these supergroups, there's these infinite possibilities combined with technology, and you know, we could keep going, people. Because after that, it goes to Super M. They were the first Korean act to hit number one on the Billboard 200 with a US debut. And then after that, you get aespa. It's just like SM is absolutely amazing. You sometimes forget how influential they've been. Isuman, mad props to you.
Yeah, BTS kind of like overshadow everybody in a way. But in terms of being on the cutting edge with all these different concepts and stuff, it really does look like SM are good at not just doing the same thing time and time again. I don't know, maybe I'm being not accurate here, but for me, it seems like YG and JYP, they're kind of even similar today to what they were before in terms of their styles and stuff.
And that's what makes them good. Yeah. The hip-hop and the 80s retro, and that's what they're good at. But that's SM has been the thing that drives it, and who knows where they'll go next.
Yeah, looking forward to continuing to see what they do, even if they're bought out by this company or that. David, as ever, you've taught us so much. We'll see you again next Monday.
Thank you very much. See you next Monday.
You can listen to Monday's segment Now and Then with David Tizard every Monday from 10 a.m. KST on hashtag Daily K.